Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. As I said in my Facebook post, I love conflict, don't you? That's what we're going to talk about today. The other day, my partner and I were on our morning walk, and as we walked back into our neighborhood, we passed a neighbor's house, and she was out on her front porch, and she called out to us, "Now this is the weather we've been waiting for." And I nodded and smiled and agreed. It was a beautiful, clear blue sky day. The temperature was already 70, and it was probably at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it was going to be 90 by the end of the day. And actually, it was the first 90 plus degree day in the Pacific Northwest in more than a year. The next morning, as we trudged up the big hill that's part of our daily walk, a man we often see on our route passed by, and he said, "This is the summer weather I like." And I nodded and smiled and agreed, and it was overcast and cool and actually threatening to rain. Why did I agree with two positions that were diametrically opposed to each other? Am I fickle? Do I simply not know what kind of weather I prefer? Am I a liar who just tells other people what I think they want to hear? I mean, I guess I could have said to my neighbor that I appreciated the sunshine, but I wasn't looking forward to the breezeless hot afternoon that I knew was coming. Or I could have said to our fellow walker that we'd already had plenty of chilly, overcast, so-called summer days. But I didn't, of course, do either of those things. And most people wouldn't, would they? These exchanges, they're low stakes. And agreeing with both of those positions, even though they were oppositional to each other, cost me nothing and commits me to nothing. They're examples of what's called phatic communication. And we sometimes disregard this kind of communication because it has very little information value, as my two opposite responses would suggest. But they do have a value in terms of connection. Phatic communication is low information, but it's high in contact. It's a way of saying the channel between us is open. I'm willing to share this moment. I'm willing to engage. And, you know, can you imagine how odd I would have seemed to these other people if I had started down a path of describing my deeply held views about the weather? My agreement is also a result of something else beyond just this kind of phatic communication that I understood my neighbor and my fellow walker and I were engaged in. In English, especially American English, or maybe at least in American English, statements tend to be heard as aimed at agreement. Am I right? If you think about the challenge many of us have in saying no, for example, to a request, it may be out of fear of disagreement or of disappointing another person, but it's also because the way we make requests through both words and through nonverbal behaviors direct the other person towards saying yes. Wouldn't you agree? Our topic today is conflict, and I'm starting with this example of phatic communication to point out a couple of things. First, this idea that it's our language, syntax, and grammar that are structured in a way that work against us disagreeing with our fellow human beings. Second, we engage in a fair amount of this kind of low-stakes communication throughout the course of our day, throughout the course of our lives. And we tend to agree with others in these routine ways about inconsequential things. And these are places where if we were to go to the trouble of disagreeing, we'd probably be seen as a little odd or maybe as a difficult person, and at least as someone who doesn't quite understand the unspoken rules of communication and of human interaction. So the third point is we get very little practice articulating a divergent point of view or a negative response or a clear disagreement in the course of our lives. It's the rare moment where we say something against what the other person has said. So that's a big topic, and conflict and disagreement tend to make us a little bit anxious. Most of us tend to tense up inside at the thought of it. And what can help us with that kind of buildup of tension? Well, you know the answer if you've been watching: breathing. So let's start there today, as we always do, with breathing. We focus on our breathing because it helps us focus our minds. It helps us calm down. It brings us clarity. And when we breathe this way, in a mindful way, we're going to make sure that we really, that at the end of our inhalation, we pause, and that we make our exhalation slightly longer than the inhalation. And the best way to do that is to maybe count to four on the way in and five or six on the way out. And we're going to use Lori Cameron's three deep breaths practice, which means at the first breath, we're simply going to notice the sensation of air entering and exiting our body. For the second breath, we're going to notice any place in our body where we feel tension and relax. And then for that third breath, we're going to set our intention for this moment. What do we need right now? To be open, to be clear, to be calm, whatever it is that you need right now is what you're going to do in that third breath. So if you'll join me, breath number one, just pay attention to your breath. Second breath, just relax. And third breath, set your intention for this moment. So, conflict. What is conflict? Well, if you look in the dictionary, you're going to see that they very quickly move into a conversation about war and protracted disagreements and make it very, very negative. But at a very fundamental level, a conflict is when there are incompatible positions. And that can be internal, right? I can certainly hold two incompatible positions of loving overcast and sunny weather, but I can also have incompatible positions with another person. So both kinds of conflict are relevant in terms of talking about mindfulness. And when I choose a show topic, I usually spend the week thinking about the topic, and some of that's intentional and a little preparation that I do, and some of it, is simply it refocuses my attention, doesn't it, to have an idea about what I'm going to talk about for an hour with all of you. So this week I've been really paying attention to the experience of incompatible positions. So, for instance, we're the new neighbors in the neighborhood, and the folks next door reached out to us a few days ago and said that the way we trim the foliage around our house has creates problems for them. And we had incompatible positions about the trimming of foliage. I worked with a client this week who wanted to tell her supervisor that she had a disagreement with him. And really, I think she thought she was telling him that he wasn't doing his job correctly. Maybe not her intention, but to tell your supervisor, hey, I think you need to do this, might be a sense of, we have incompatible positions. You think you should do your job this way. I think you should do it this other way. I've been working with people in general who notice that they are in disagreement, have incompatible positions with people, and their mind tends to go, and this is what I really want to talk about, is when we're in the face of conflict, where does our mind go, right? This is what mindfulness practice helps us figure out, is what are the habits of mind? So in a conflict situation, where does my mind go? And I think in both the situations I describe and in other places that I've been talking to people about, it tends to go to a couple of places. One is catastrophe, right? This is going to blow up. This is going to be a terrible outcome here. And the second place it goes is a kind of foreshadowing of the conversation. Of, I know what I'll say, but then I know what the other person will say. I know what their reaction's going to be. They're going to be very unhappy with me. They're going to say this. It's not going to work out. Nothing will change. We get really wrapped up in this idea that we know exactly what's coming next, and that even bothering to state a disagreement is probably useless. So that's what I've been thinking about this week when I think about conflict and mindfulness, is how can I notice where my mind goes? And once I'm doing that, what can I notice is happening? I can notice what's happening in my body in terms of the tension, but I can also notice what my thoughts are, that I tend to, in my case, have two reactions. One is the kind of catastrophe, to share a disagreement is to end a relationship, or to say, this is useless. I'm going to play it out in my head, the dialogue between me and the other person, and I know it's going to lead to nothing good. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about our own experience of conflict growing up, because even if, like my mother, you made a decision at a young age that you were going to be completely different from your family when you got to be an adult, which she tried her best to do, but still the vestiges of our family life, early family life, really shape how we respond to conflict, and despite what our conscious mind might try to do. And I think it's particularly true at the physical level. When we're in the place where we think conflict, incompatible positions are arising, that really it starts in our body, what's happening to us in that moment. And that's, so we want to dig down a little bit to see where that comes from so that we can bring attention to it and maybe make change. So we'll be right back. I'm Mary Angela McGuire. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Raising the vibrations through stimulating conversations while exploring the mysteries of Atlantis and Lemuria on Tales from the Merworld Radio with me, Amira Beth. Join us every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Be ready to feel empowered and an active part of the changing earth. For more information about me, visit AmiraBeth.com.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yeah! Check us out, thedrpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm. Oh my goodness.
How do you feel? Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. So this week on our mindfulness journey, we're talking about conflict. And we're talking a little bit now in this segment about where our individual responses to conflict come from, particularly the ones that I would say are preverbal, the ones where we are reacting in our bodies. I had a chance to think about this yesterday afternoon. I was sitting on the front porch, and it's mostly a very residential neighborhood, so it's pretty quiet much of the time. And it was not quiet yesterday afternoon. I noticed initially I heard some kids playing three or four houses down and across the street, and one voice in particular rose above all the others. Every few seconds, a young voice, I would have said maybe a four-year-old, maybe a girl. I just say that based on pitch. Well, probably any four-year-old has that pitch of a voice. Let out a big, loud, high-pitched scream, bordering on a screech. And it happened a lot, several times in a row. And between the screaming, I did hear two women near them talking in quiet, normal kind of tone of voice. So I felt that the child was not in danger and was not being hurt, but was simply expressing what to me seemed like a very negative feeling or moment by just screaming her head off. And it bugged me. It really bugged me, and I started noticing that it bugged me. And so I was fortunate. I had the time to sit there and ask myself one of Tara Brach's great questions, which is, what in me is disturbed by this? Because it wasn't just what I noticed, the fact of the screaming, because it was a noise, right? Because I'm reading a book, so maybe it's just that I'm troubled because it's interrupting my reading. But as I sat there quietly and really paid attention to what was going on, I noticed that when the car had driven down the street that clearly needed a new muffler, and so it was very loud, that hadn't provoked that same kind of feeling inside. When I noticed the birds in the trees who were quite loud, particularly the crows, that hadn't bothered me. The dog barking down the street, no reaction from me. It was the little girl across the street screaming at the top of her lungs. And I actually had this thought at one point, somebody needs to tell her. Somebody needs to talk to her and say, that's not okay. And I think shame is too strong a word, but because I don't want to overreact to my own thinking, but I want to say I was caught up short by realizing I had that thought. Somebody should tell her to stop doing that, that it's not okay. So then I start to explore that. Well, where does that come from, that idea that that's not okay? And I realize almost immediately that as a kid that age, I didn't do that. My mother has a story of me throwing one temper tantrum in my entire life, and she was so startled by it that she burst into laughter. I was not only a quiet child, I was a child that was so quiet that people loved that about me, and they told me that. They appreciated how quiet I was. They appreciated, my mother could say to anybody she knew, would you watch Mary for an hour? Would you watch Mary this afternoon? Could I bring Mary over? Because she was working and struggling and there was a lot going on and I got babysat a lot. And everybody had more or less the same response. Sure, she's no trouble. That was my middle name. I was Mary Angela No Trouble. And that's what I really learned was appropriate behavior. So for this little girl to be screaming over and over again, I realized that that part of me that learned how to deal with conflict, I learned personally, don't engage in it. Don't make yourself loud and noisy and difficult. Don't be any trouble to anybody else. So my conscious mind thinks, you know, you go, girl. You scream your little head off every day. I'm sure she's trapped in the house much of the day, and I think good for her to get out there and just let it all out. But what does that tell me about how I learned to deal with conflict, right? It taught me that my role is to be quiet. And especially because I did grow up in a household where there was a lot of conflict. And what I saw, not so much what I learned about how I should behave, but what I saw with other people's behavior was that conflict destroyed relationships. Conflict ended relationships, not always permanently, but often for long stretches of time. Whether it was my immediate family or my extended family, relationships beyond the family, conflict, disagreement, incompatible positions led to dissolution over and over and over again. And so I learned that that's, you know, you put those two things together, be quiet, don't tell people you're unhappy, don't tell people you have an incompatible position with theirs, and a relationship will stay. Not always true, of course, as we find out as adults. So that's what hope you're thinking about is what have you learned about conflict in your life? How did your family handle it? Were you one of those kinds of families? And they are out there. I don't think there are a lot of them, but they are out there where people get their feelings out. They say what's true for them, and they're still loving relationships at the end of the day. I admire that enormously. It wasn't my experience. But how our families dealt with conflict, what feelings were produced and what outcomes were produced has a lot to do with then how we're going to respond to conflict, both at that immediate physical, visceral level, and then where our minds go, that habit of thought that we have in response to conflict. So I think there's a communication concept that I want to talk about now that I think is helpful as we try to imagine mindful ways of dealing with incompatible positions. We often mistakenly believe that it's not possible to disagree with someone without being disagreeable. And that's certainly what I saw in my family, that by the time a person was willing to say what it is that they thought, things had gotten sort of out of control in terms of anger and frustration. And so many of us see that kind of belief play out in our lives. And we've talked about this before, in the show, about the tendency to wait until we're absolutely furious before we confront someone with a disagreement. And of course, by that time, we may have really demonized the other person. And in our response, we may look like a bit of a demon ourselves and look as if our response is somewhat disproportionate to the situation. And it's probably because we've let so much build up. And if you think about the mental energy we use in these kinds of situations, all the time we spend before the blow up, avoiding telling the truth, our truth, right? Because we fear the other person's reaction, because we don't want to hurt the other person, because we don't think that they'll respond well, because it's always been the same in the past, that it's very patterned communication, that's called an unwanted repetitive interaction. So in communication studies, we talk about the difference between confirming and disconfirming responses when we have interactions with another person. And I've always found this really helpful in thinking about disagreements, because it's this idea that we can have a confirming response to another person without agreeing with them. So I was super proud of myself the other day when we had this conversation with our neighbors, because we definitely disagree about how the hedges and other shrubbery and flora around the house should be trimmed. And as we were getting ready to go talk to them, my partner and I were talking about our perspective on it. And she said, well, I think we're really clear that we know what outcome we're looking for. And I said, well, yes, I think we know what our boundaries are, but at the same time, we haven't seen it from their perspective. And I mean that in a literal sense. I'd never been on their porch. I didn't know how the shrubbery looked from their angle. So I literally wanted to see that. And she kind of rolled her eyes at me and smiled and is just so glad she lives with a life coach, right? And we did have a pretty good conversation with them. And there's still some disagreement. I don't think we see it exactly the same way. But at the end of the conversation, and this is the part I was really happy with myself about, I thanked them for telling us. And it was absolutely sincere, because I had thought about this as we were planning this conversation, about how hard it must have been for them, right? To tell a new neighbor, hey, basically you're bugging us. And they did it in a nice way. They were very matter of fact about it. And that's what I said to them was, thanks for being so direct. And it made it much easier for us to respond. I think they were a little bit startled. But what I want to say is the outcome of that is not only I'm so happy with myself for managing this well, but also that it was a confirming response in the sense that it acknowledged them. At the same time, it wasn't an agreement with them. I didn't say thanks and we'll get right on that list and we'll do everything you asked us to do exactly the way the previous owners of the house did it. That was not the outcome. It was just, thank you for telling us. Thank you for telling us in such a direct way. And we'll continue to talk about this and find a way forward. And probably not, our positions may remain incompatible. We may never be in full agreement, but we'll probably be in closer agreement because we have dealt with each other in a confirming way, acknowledging each other's position, rather than waiting until we're so angry that there's an outburst and then the responses are disconfirming. And so examples of disconfirming responses, it can be that kind of dominating, angry response, but also if you think about it, a dismissive response, right? An indifferent response, those can also feel incredibly disconfirming. And so it's really trying to make the distinction between what's the information you and I need to exchange about these incompatible positions versus how is it that we need to treat each other and talk to each other about those differences. So can I acknowledge your humanity And I say that, and I know that sounds like such a lofty thing to acknowledge your humanity, but, and it doesn't matter if really, if I'm talking to a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old, my partner, somebody I work with, a stranger in the store, right? I have the opportunity when I'm in the presence of an incompatible set of positions or viewpoints to acknowledge that in a way that allows the other person to maintain their humanity, their dignity, and to treat them that way and to show it. Will I always get that back? Sadly, no. Does that matter? In some ways, not. So that's what I think is really important when we think about this in terms of communication concepts, because we get so roiled up inside when we notice those incompatible positions, and we struggle so much with thinking about how am I going to articulate this difference. And one thing that can help us is noticing the difference between what we need to tell the other person and how we can say it in a way that acknowledges them and keeps them in the conversation and reduces their likelihood of being defensive in response to what we say. So when we come back, we are going to talk more about conflict and more about mindfulness specifically and what it has to tell us about how to remain in a position of integrity when we deal with conflict. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Yeah, yippee-skippee to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Living a richly abundant life sound too good to be true? Listen in to Richly Abundant Women with Julie Steelman on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Embrace a vibrant future of breaking free financially and creating a richly abundant life filled with prosperity and growth. To learn more about Julie Steelman and Richly Abundant Women, visit www.juliesteelman.com.
For stimulating conversation and keys that will change your life, tune in to Dynamic Destiny with Coach Pete every first and third Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Pete to get clarity for your calling and practical wisdom for results. For more about Coach Pete, visit PeteCoaching.com. That's P-E-T-E Coaching.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And today on our mindfulness journey, we're talking about conflict. What happens when we're afraid of conflict, when we seek to avoid it, when we believe that no good can come of it? Well, one thing we've been talking about is that it tends to build up whatever those that incompatible position is that we have either within ourselves or with another person. If it persists, we can try to keep shoving it down and avoid it and ignore it, but often it will erupt eventually and maybe make matters much worse than if we had found a way to address it at an earlier stage. And one of the ways we've been talking about addressing conflict is to really notice the difference between what's the content of our disagreement, of our incompatible positions, versus how I might communicate that difference to you. How can I communicate it in a way that acknowledges your humanity, that really keeps you part of the conversation, that doesn't demonize you, but that allows me to remain truthful to myself and to tell you what is true for me and what I need in this situation. It's a big challenge because we've been talking about, you know, where did we learn to deal with conflict? At home, was it always dealt with well? Heck no. If we look around our culture, also not dealt with well often. So we don't have a lot of good examples. And because of things like phatic communication, the kind of simple interactions that we have with people every day, where we agree even sometimes when we're not really agreeing that much, we don't have a lot of practice at even simple levels of disagreement. The other thing that happens when we avoid conflict is that we never experience the benefits of conflict. Yes, benefits. It's true. And this is why I say I love conflict. And what are the benefits? Well, one thing we know is that when we're engaged in conflict with another person, we can guarantee that we are both wanting, in a sense, to be here. Right? There is a willingness to engage. It shows some level of commitment to the relationship. And that can become very unhealthy in a very ugly, repetitive pattern. But in general, if I'm willing to stay present enough to keep talking to you, even if I'm mad, that shows that I want to be here and want to be in this relationship. Also, in terms of decision making, we know from tons of research that conflict is part of critical thinking, right? It's testing ideas. It's seeing things from multiple points of view. And it's why group work is both so maddening and so powerful, is we bring lots of different points of view together, incompatible positions, and it improves decision making. We do a better job of coming to a conclusion with a group where we have multiple perspectives than we do when we make decisions by ourselves. And it is also the case, and research would suggest this strongly, that relationships that can withstand the articulation of incompatible positions are healthier and stronger. And if you think about this, I hope from your own experience, whether it's, if we're in the presence of incompatible positions and we have no commitment to the relationship, we just walk away. So I can say, if you're going to stay with me and we're going to talk about this, that's a good sign. Second, if we bring incompatible positions, we may be able to make better decisions. And that's a great thing. And if we withstand this conflict, we probably have a stronger relationship. And if you think about your own relationships where you've weathered some storms, if you've genuinely weathered that storm and come to a place where you're treating each other with respect despite your differences, you know that the relationship is better for it. So what does mindfulness have to do with this and what role does it play? I think the most important thing is the idea that if we practice mindfulness, we have a better understanding and we're better able to notice where what's happening in our body and where our mind is going when we're in a stressful situation. And for most of us, conflict is a stressful situation. For most of us, just the observation that we have with another person, incompatible positions, often can raise our temperature and put us in a place of distress and suffering. So mindfulness helps us see that before those feelings and those thoughts run away with us or before we stuff them down. So that's the most important thing that mindfulness can do for us, is to help us notice how we're responding when we're in that situation. And that can lead to then a second thing, which is slowing down. I think one of the things you notice, and if you see this and think about a movie or a television show or a book, someplace fictional where drama is essential in order for us to bother to read or watch, right? That conflict always often shows immediate responses. Right? The teenager comes into the house and asks a question and the parent has an immediate response and the conflict starts from there. I want to do X. No, you can't do X. People never take time in those dramatic interpretations of life to stop. And so I want to ask you to think about this as I've been thinking about this in my own life. What would your relationships look like if you started saying to the other person in that moment, I need some time to think about this? Or, I see this as really important to you, and I want to give you a good answer, and I don't want to just react. Or, you'll need to give me some time to process this, because you and I both know that if I just react, we're probably going to get in an argument, and I'm going to need to take some time to think about this. What if the habit that we started to form was the habit of asking for time, right? The habit of saying, this is important, and I'm acknowledging your humanity, and I'm confirming you as a person, but I'm not going to give you an immediate answer because I know myself. And I know my immediate answer is the answer that leads to conflict, that leads to an unproductive, unhealthy, unhelpful interaction. We may still, even after I've thought about this, have differences of opinion, but we can probably then talk about it in a calmer way. A second thing that I think that mindfulness can help us do is identify our hotspots. You know, what are the topics and who are the people that you tend to react to rather than respond to, right? That immediate fists up kind of response. Where and when and with whom do you feel as if you have to have an immediate response? And then ask yourself why. Why, when I'm interacting with that person, the person with whom I most often have conflict, why is it so hard for me to take time? Why do I feel that I have to just jump right in there with an answer, right? Is it that I'm afraid if I don't, I'll get steamrolled, right? They'll just roll right over me and do whatever they want, whether I want them to do it or not. Do I think they'll see my hesitation as weakness? And am I afraid to appear weak and vulnerable to this person? Am I afraid of their scorn or impatience? I think this is really a problem especially when we use that kind of soft language of interpersonal communication, that kind of, I'd like to take some time to think about this. And you can just see a teenager's eyes rolling, right? Oh my goodness. But that's no reason not to try it. That's just the reality of what might happen. So can I remind the other person that it's okay to take time before we come to a decision or a conclusion? I used to work for a woman with whom we were in a kind of high stress situation at work often. And her question to me that I found so helpful was, when somebody would come to me with something and need an immediate answer, she would always remind me, Mary Angela, whose urgency is this? Right? Is this really an urgent situation, or does it feel urgent to this person? So can I confirm that person's feeling without making a commitment to a response or a decision? And that's what mindfulness helps me get to, is to say, yep, I can see you, I can acknowledge you, I can give you some credit for your question and allow you the dignity of saying your question is legitimate, but at the same time, that doesn't oblige me to an immediate response. I'm going to tell you that I need some time. And why do we want to do that? What does that help us do? Well, Martha Beck, you know, if you've listened to the show before, I went through Martha Beck's life coach training program, and it was really excellent and helpful. And she talks a lot about integrity. And she has this quote about integrity that I want to share with you, because I think it's very important to think about in terms of our mindful responses to stressful, conflict-oriented situations, places where our position is incompatible with the other person's. She says the word integrity comes from integer, and it means integer, I think, wholeness, right? So living in integrity means expressing and doing what's true for you in all situations. Not, you know, on the one hand, we're so much raised in our culture to say, oh, the truth is the most important thing. But, you know, there's lots of research that suggests that we shade the truth all day long. So to think about that, to expressing and doing what's true for you in all situations. She says, depart from your truth in any way. These are such hard examples. Offer a fake smile. Flatter your awful boss. Oh dear. Marry for money. And you become two people, the true knower and the lie actor. That's duplicity. And duplicity, not social noncompliance, is the real enemy of joy. So sometimes we don't think that joy is an option. And I think Martha Beck would say joy is always an option, but the road to joy can be somewhat difficult And especially in this question of dealing with incompatible positions with other people, either people we love or people who are important to us for a variety of reasons. And so what can we do in that situation when we're realizing my position is incompatible with yours, and my instinct, my impulse is to depart from my truth? Right? Either by shoving these feelings down and acting like everything's okay, right? Or maybe departing from the truth is also being ugly to you, right? If you think about close love relationships where people say horrible things to each other sometimes, you know, and then afterwards say, oh, I didn't mean that, and I wish I hadn't said it, and all those things. It's very difficult. Is that it? Where's, you know, and think how much that complicates relationships. What was the true thing? The ugly thing you said to me, or when you apologized, or when you told me you loved me, right? So in these moments when we feel rushed into responding, we often depart from our truth in those moments, either by acting like nothing's wrong, or maybe overreacting to the situation in ways that we'd rather not. You know, if you see those conflict situations or those repeated patterns people have, you know, neither person looks happy. There's no joy in that. They're both sort of staked out positions that they may not even entirely believe in, but they don't know how to get out of it. And one way to get out of it is time, is the pause, right? Tara Brach's sacred pause. I feel the feelings coming. I notice my mind going in that direction. I'm going to take time, and I'm going to ask for time while acknowledging the other person's humanity. And then the final thing that I think I want to mention about this that gets in the way of our happiness and our joy in these conflict situations is what the Buddhists would call an attachment to a specific outcome in this case. Attachment is always something that Buddhists are cautious about, but in when we are in a conflict situation, if we believe that there's only one solution that will be satisfying to us and we've predetermined it, then we've really closed off the opportunity for the kind of critical thinking and relationship building that conflict can actually produce. So when we come back, we're going to do a little summary, and I'm going to tell you about next week's show. So Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Please join us after the break.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Are you ready to awaken to your divine and true potential? Tune into a spirited exchange radio with me, Carrie Kadambi, every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We discuss the evolution of the modern mind and how the power of awakening, healing, and connecting allows us to step into living a life of love in action. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Get your goddess groove on with me, Laura Hosford. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where I offer you authentic channel messages of love, inspiration, and heart healing grace. Get your goddess groove on. When the goddess speaks, everyone listens. For more information, visit laurahosford.com. That's laurahosford.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and this is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm so glad you joined me today. We are talking about conflict, and we're talking about the relationship between conflict and mindfulness. So I want you to think about, what are some ideas you might take from today's conversation? And I'll give you some suggestions, and then maybe you can let me know on Facebook which ones you took or which ones you thought of on your own. We have typically in our culture a very negative view of conflict. I was saying, even if you look at a dictionary definition, it's hard to get to the most basic definition that says conflict is simply two incompatible positions. But the definitions almost immediately go to protracted disagreements and essentially hard feelings and war. Before you know it, we're at war when we have conflict. A couple of things I hope you'll remember is that conflict is actually a very positive force in our lives in many respects when it's handled reasonably well, right? None of us is perfect. We're not going to be perfect every time we're in a conflict situation. But when we can think about it in a productive way, we realize, usually after the fact, that relationships improve and are closer after people have survived a conflict with each other or managed a conflict with each other. Decisions are better when there's been conflict or incompatible ideas have come together and people have reasoned through them and come to make decisions or conclusions. They're improved. The quality is improved. The effectiveness is improved if there's been real conflict. So that's something to think about, is actually conflict is a positive force. Second, I hope you're thinking about how you as an individual think about conflict, react to conflict, and what you learned at the earliest stages of your memory about how people should deal with conflict. You might remember, as I do, how I was treated, which was I was deeply praised for being a person who provided no conflict in my family. And I saw that conflict led to the dissolution of relationships. So I am a person who both as an individual believes that I shouldn't engage in conflict or produce it, and also that if I do, any relationship is at deep risk. So that really shapes me, and I know it means that I'm anxious in anticipation of or in the midst of conflict situations. We talked a little bit about the idea that you can disagree with someone without disconfirming them as a person. And I'll be honest, that is the clearest, most effective way to lodge a disagreement, is to take that kind of pause that the Buddhist, like Tara Brach, would talk about in a moment where there's conflict, to not be rushed into a response, so that when you do respond, you can do it in a way that acknowledges the other person while still remaining true to yourself and your position on the subject. And it is magical. It's not magic at all. It's human interaction, and it's what happens when we treat another person with dignity and respect, even in the face of disagreement. It may not always be possible in public life, but it can be possible in private life, on one-on-one situations with our friends and families and coworkers, to acknowledge the other person, to make eye contact, to acknowledge their position before and while we're telling them that we have a different incompatible position. It makes all the difference in the world. It's, in fact, disarming, which is an interesting word, right? If conflict leads to war, acknowledging the other person's humanity disarms the conflict. So I hope you'll be thinking about that. I hope you'll be thinking about taking time when you know that incompatible positions are present, to not be rushed into a response, because it's that rushed response that tends to lead to those patterns of communication where we know what the other person's going to say, we know this, nothing's going to change, we know this isn't going to improve this situation, and so we have a very defeated attitude towards a disagreement or these incompatible positions with other people. And that, you know, is not healthy in a relationship. It doesn't improve decision making. It doesn't draw us closer to the other person. And it can often lead eventually to a kind of outburst because we are so frustrated and angry and have kind of pushed our feelings around and aside, etc. So lots to think about today in terms of managing conflict. And this is what I talk about with clients often. So if you are interested in working with me as a life coach, you know, you can reach me through MaryAngelaMcGuire@gmail.com, or you can go to my website, which is mcguirelifecoach.com. And the first conversation is always free. And here's what we'll do in that first conversation. We'll talk about what you'd like to achieve through coaching. People have different goals, but often it is the feeling of being stuck in place in your life, stuck in conflict situations, stuck at work, stuck in your family relationships, and wanting to feel unstuck. So in that first conversation, you'll tell me what you hope to achieve. I'll describe the inquiry process that I use with clients, and then we'll have a short session so that you can determine if working with me will meet your needs. You can, as I said, visit my website, mcguirelifecoach.com, or you can email me at maryangelamcguire@gmail.com, and we'll set up a time to talk. And that first conversation is usually about 45 minutes. So I hope you'll join me next Thursday at noon Pacific time and 3 p.m. Eastern time. My guest will be Mr. Courtney Hill. Courtney is a young videographer from Chicago, Illinois, and he's going to tell us about his experiences. He's a world traveler, an artist, and a fascinating person, and I hope you'll join me next week for that conversation. Before we go today, let's take three more deep breaths, shall we, for clarity, for calm, for alertness. And so here we go. First breath, just pay attention to your breath. Second breath, just relax. Third breath, set your intention for the next hour. What is the next hour going to bring, and what do you want to bring to that hour in terms of your energy, your focus, your attention? If you haven't tried it before, and we do the three deep breaths so often on the show, and if you've been watching, you probably could do it in your sleep. And that's what I want to say about that. If you're a person who wakes up in the middle of the night often and has trouble going back to sleep, those three deep breaths can be very helpful. It's also something that I strongly encourage clients to do when they know they're going into a situation that causes stress. So a meeting at work, or a visit with family, whatever it might be, where you can feel the tension starting inside, you can notice your mind going to some of those troubled, unhappy places. Take a moment, three deep breaths, and just let yourself be present in the moment and be somewhat more relaxed and more focused. And it is very effective and very helpful for most people. So in the meantime, before next week when Mr. Courtney Hill is going to be my guest, and I'm very excited to have him on the show, I hope that you will be curious about your mind. And I hope even more than that, you will be kind to yourself. Self-compassion is a critical feature. And as I've said before, we often think that as long as we're compassionate and kind towards other people, it doesn't really matter if we're compassionate and kind towards ourselves. But as Jack Kornfield says, that compassion that doesn't include the self is incomplete. And I would say, I'd go a little further maybe and say, I'm not sure it's also ultimately sincere or authentic. If I am unkind to myself, I'm probably bringing even what might look like compassion, but might really be a sense of judgment, of domineering, dominance, and of superiority to my interactions with a person to whom I believe I'm being compassionate. It's when I free myself and I'm kind to myself, when I can say, I am enough as I am. That's true compassion. And I will just say, I said this to a client yesterday. He said, what's a good mantra I could take into the situation where I'm nervous? And I said, I am enough just as I am. And he said, oh, wow, that's so hard to say. Right? Self-compassion is so hard to come by. So I strongly urge you to look for it in your life, to allow yourself, and even to say something like, I'm good enough just as I am. I am enough just as I am. You may not mean it initially, but try it out. Keep trying it out. So until next week, thanks for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. MaryAngela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.